Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Music, it's not just part of our daily lives, it's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
My music.
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling. It's all part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich. This is episode 149, and it's another Music Memories episode. And today I am joined by a first-time guest here on the show. He is the host of Alan Forel's Pro Wrest Paradise at PW Torch. He's also a columnist at PW Torch. It's the one and only Alan Cunahan. Alan, hello.
Andrew, how are you? I am excited to be here. You said this is my first appearance here on the show. It is indeed, but it is not the first time we have discussed me coming on the show. Do you remember the wrestler you approached me with to do a show on many moons ago?
I was going to bring this up, yeah, because this is a long time coming, actually. Because years back, yeah, years back, back in 2018, I was planning a Zack Sabre Jr. episode, and I offered you the chance to do it with me, first and foremost, and you declined politely, of course, because analyzing music isn't really your forte, which I understood completely.
I would have literally just been like, yeah, that's a catchy tune. I enjoy that one. It's like I am not musically knowledgeable whatsoever. I don't know my A sharp from my B sharp and from my wristwatch. Nevertheless, I love listening to this show, and I'm a huge fan of this show because the way you guys discuss it is great. I just think I would have been a terrible guest. But when you started doing Music Memories and I listened to a few of those shows, I was like, now this is something I might be able to be decent on. And then I came hat in hand to you and I was like, hey, Mr. Rich, do you think maybe I could get on one of those shows?
Get out of here, goddammit. Yeah, I had your chance. Get out of here. No, I've always had that itch in the back of my head to get you on here eventually. And with Music Memories, you know, it's not about analyzing music like we normally do. It's about, a casual conversation about our wrestling fandoms and about these memories, which is your forte, of course, as your many years of podcasting experience can attest to. So I'm glad we could finally get John here, Alan, and do something that's more, your speed, of course.
Yeah, I've basically like carved out my niche now in terms of podcasting as guy who talks about things from his fandom he likes as opposed to analyzing current events or like, yeah, it's, I feel like, because Japanese wrestling was obviously a strong suit for me, something I followed like pretty much from like 2005, 2006 up until 2019, I basically followed everything that was happening in Japan, and I could talk about pretty much everything that was happening in Japan. But after like struggling through clap crowds for as long as we kind of have had to, and not even just that, I do think a lot of poor decisions from the promotions themselves and various different issues. My interest in Japanese wrestling is at an all-time low since I first got into it. So with that gone, God, thank the Lord for AEW, because if it wasn't for AEW, I'd have pretty much, and that's why like people like nitpick AEW, and that's fair, and sometimes create some interesting discussions and interesting audio, and I enjoy reading about it or listening to. But I'm so like just thankful that I have AEW, because it's honestly the only actual thing happening in wrestling that I, well, Dragon Gate as well. I still wear my Dragon Gate badge on my sleeve, so I keep everything with Dragon Gate front of mind. But even with that, it's difficult with the clap crowds sometimes, and when you see a match that you know would just be getting a much better response in the past, it's tough. But I'm just super happy we have AEW, something that feels like normal wrestling, that like it has its issues, there's things I don't like about it, but being able to follow something that I mostly do like and is exciting is great. But aside from that, like when it comes to podcasting, I just like, I've got my 34L30 series where I'm just discussing 30 years of being a wrestling fan and 30 of my favorite wrestlers. And I've got like recently, the other day, I just did a show about miracle matches and basically matches from the past, again, that I kind of consider falling under the banner of a miracle match. So I'm all about going back into my memories as a wrestling fan, and I think this show will be a great opportunity to do that.
Well, you mentioned your show. This is also a case of me returning the favor, because I've been on your show 3 times now. I've been on about once a year or so the past couple of years, and most recently we did the Forbidden Door preview back in the summer. And every time I do your show, it's always a blast. We make magic together every time out. And I wanted to bring that magic onto this podcast here, Alan. So to borrow some lyrics from a very legendary theme song, I want to welcome you to my world, it's time to leave your mark in my world. And unlike Jeff Jarrett's theme, I do want to hear your big mouth talk, Alan. So there you go.
I'm picturing like a Garrick, you're going to spring Garrick Kidney on me as you started singing. He's going to just walk through the door strutting, doing that Jeff thing where I pointed this out on Twitter a couple weeks ago. I love the Jeff thing where he just starts like, it's this taunt he does where he's doing it for years, and I never really kind of noticed it before. Like Jeff always does that where he just kind of like sweeps his arms out like he's telling the whole crowd to evacuate the building. He's like, get out of here. It's like it's what the guys used to do before doing like the Fargo strut, but he just does a much more aggressive animated version of it now. It's like, clear it away, get out of here, Jeff Jarrett's coming through, it's my world. So unfortunately Garrett is not here to do that for us.
No, but he's here in spirit, I think. There is that at least. So yeah, but anyway, Alan, you know, since it's the first time on the show. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I muted myself as I started talking. Me and I'm such an audio expert here. You think I've not been doing this for 14 years, but myself and Garrett had our one meeting underneath a tree outside an OTT show in 2018, where we talked shop during intermission. It was a real meeting of the pro wrestling minds. Me and Garrett, hashing out, talking scoops, trading info, trading war stories. It was a great opportunity to meet Garrett, and I hope I get to do that more often.
For sure. Well, since it's your first time on the show here, Alan, I'll ask you this question that I ask all my first-time guests. How'd you become a wrestling fan? How'd you get into it way back when?
Oh, well, my earliest memories, like, obviously, like, because I got into it super young, so those really early memories kind of blend together, and it's hard to say this was the first thing I saw, but I know like comfortably like the first handful of things I saw, and and they certainly stand out. And the one that I think was the earliest was an episode of whatever syndicated show, Challenge All American Superstars, coming on afternoon weekend on Sky One in probably 1991. And there was a local kind of coming to your area promo that they did with a bunch of wrestlers back to back, like they used to do on the TV back then. And they had Earthquake, Jimmy Hart, and I feel like there was a third person in there, and I don't think it would have been Typhoon. No, it wouldn't have been Typhoon if it was 91. It might have still been Dino Bravo. But anyway, Earthquake and Jimmy Hart were definitely there. And Earthquake was jumping up and down, creating a ruckus, and I was like, oh my God. And he said, we're coming to the UK, and I'm coming to your town. And even though I'm not from the UK, I am from Ireland, and this was threatening enough proximity-wise, I got very scared. Especially when he said he's coming to your town. I was like, because he pointed right at the screen, so I just thought he was pointing to me, telling me he was coming to your town, Alan. And I ran outside, stricken with terror, to where my dad was trimming the hedges in the front garden. And I called my dad down from the ladder that he was on, and I just started probably ranting at a mile a minute. This big guy jumping up and down, he's coming, he's going to knock on my door. Like, I remember thinking in my head that Earthquake was going to, like, literally knock on the door of my house with Jimmy Hart and, I don't know, start bouncing, maybe sit on me. I'm not sure, but I was really, really worried about this, and my dad had to squash those worries. And then, like, probably my next memory that would have been after that, again, involved my dad, because I was watching the Macho Man Jake the snake bite angle. And after the snake bites the Macho Man's arm, you see the red bit of blood streaming down. And I remember I was just in awe, and my dad just goes, that's tomato ketchup. And I was like, even as a six-year-old at that point, I was like, hang on now, Dad, how could it be tomato ketchup? There's all these fans there, like, how would they have been able to pause, get out a ketchup bottle, put the ketchup on his arm with all those fans sitting there watching? Doesn't make sense. So I called my dad's bluff on the logic element of it, and I didn't know about blading at that stage, but even if I did, it really wasn't a blading thing. I guess Macho Man, like, legit let the snake bite him to cause the blood, so that was probably as legit as it comes. So yeah, my dad, Papa 4L, was a little too cynical back then.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, as a kid, whenever I watched wrestling with my dad, he never, you know, was like, oh, that's fake and stupid or whatever. He was always, like, going along with it, which I think
is mine still does it now. If I try to show him something now, it's like, yeah, he just loves to call bullshit on it. Like, I watched an episode of Rampage last Christmas when I was staying over at my parents, and he was in the room as I was watching it, and he buried everything except Hook. He was like, I forgot what his comment about Hook was. He was like, something like, oh, they're really going to make him a big thing, aren't they? It's like, yeah, I guess so.
A man of culture, I see. Yes, yes.
you don't remember having similar burials from your dad, you were saying?
You know, I don't think I ever did. No, my dad's always been very supportive of me being a wrestling fan. Like it's never really been our big bonding thing. That's always been more movies and TV shows and stand-up comedy or whatever. But no, he's always been very positive about wrestling, and my mom was too as well. So yeah, I have no shared experiences in that regard there, Alan. So
yeah, my mom pretty much never. My mom is, like, just not a TV watcher, really. She's not someone who engages in entertainment too much. Like, she's just kind of, you know, prefers to worry about, like, her life and, like, you know, doing her job, raising her children and blocking out everything that is very kind of like Marge Simpson-esque, never like kind of gives herself a chance to like enjoy something. And she doesn't like have the attention span to watch TV or anything. She just, so like, she's never been in sport. Like would kind of have, she'll watch the news. So she'll have like enough knowledge of sport just from the news. But like she used to, when I started watching American football, geez, that's weird. I literally just got a text from my mom. She's listening in. when I started watching American football and MMA around the same time, she just branched all that under the umbrella of wrestling. Like she'd come in, I'd be watching American football, and she's like, oh, you're watching your wrestling. Or like MMA and wrestling, I can kind of see, but why she thought American football was also under the umbrella of wrestling, I guess just because it was from America and I was watching it at weird times. Maybe that's it. But yeah, it was it was definitely my hobby that I did not share with my parents whatsoever. But somehow those initial forays into wrestling that I described, I became just a gigantic fan. That obviously, like, talking the time frame of when that stuff was happening, like the year that followed was when the UK and Ireland just got into all things Americana and pro wrestling. WWF in particular had a huge popularity boom over here, and I mean you couldn't go to any like toy shop or stationery shop without like seeing WWF branded stuff. Like they deserve so much credit. Like the WWF marketing machine, and it was a small machine back then, like whether you credit Vince or Linda or whoever they had running the show on that end of things, like they deserve so much credit for how much trash merch they got into the UK in 92. Like I had Big Boss Man underpants and like Bret Hart socks and pencil cases with like the Legion of Doom on them, and like all the magazines, posters, and all this kind of stuff. It was so easy to get. It was everywhere. They did a fantastic job with that stuff. And that probably leads us nicely to what we're going to talk about, doesn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, in a couple minutes here, for sure. Well, I want to ask you this, too. I know analyzing music isn't really your thing, but has music itself played a big part in your wrestling fandom at all?
I would call it a nice accompaniment to my wrestling fandom. Like there have been songs over the years, both entrance themes and songs for wrestling shows that have really that you really catch on to and that get over with you to an extent. But I would say it's less that music has aided my wrestling fandom than wrestling has influenced my music fandom, as sad as that is, because I probably was watching wrestling for like 4 years before I ever bought a tape or an album of a song. Like the first music I remember buying was like 1996, you know, and I never went to concerts, nothing like that. I just wasn't a big music fan. I had no issue with music. I just would like to be things I'd like here and there, but I was not a music person, you know, like most people are. I think it's a fairly common thing that a lot of people are into, especially in their formative years. And it just really wasn't for me. And then it's actually not one of the songs, or it's not one of the topics we're going to talk about today, but I do know that when I was kind of getting into indie wrestling and Japanese wrestling, particularly with Ring of Honor, with all the songs they used for their guys for entrance teams, that introduced me to like so many bands that I like, AFI for instance. Like I have so much AFI music that I've listened to over the years since discovering them while I was in college, not because I like was given an AFI CD, but because I downloaded Miseria Cantare on like LimeWire or Kazaa, and then downloaded a bunch of their other songs off the back of that. And it was similar with a lot of kind of like some of the Japanese songs as well. And like, even as mental as this is, I can't believe I'm admitting this, but I talked recently on podcast about my love for Shakira. So I was already a big Shakira fan, but then I remember on an early episode of Figure Four, Brian and Vinny Show, one of those shows, it would have been Cinco de Mayo 2006, because F4W Online started in June 05, and it was a Cinco de Mayo. Brian played for the opening of the song, or the opening of his show. He played, excuse my voice going here. Her name is Julie. I don't know if you even know if she's that famous, but Julieta Venegas or Venegas, Me Voy, it was the name of the song. I was like, oh, listen to this catchy tune. And I ended up like downloading two of her albums. I was like, ah, yeah, it's fantastic. She's a great accompaniment to my Shakira songs. So yeah, very, that it also led to me having, wrestling led to me having a very like eclectic taste in music, because the big thing was that I could associate songs or whatever with some like happy wrestling memory or something, and that would lead to like just real variation. So it'd be like AFI on one hand and then Shakira on the next, or Julieta Venegas, or like insert like random Japanese band, like what are they called, Shonen no Kaze. They are a Japanese reggae band that Fujita Junior Hayato has used a bunch of their songs as entrance music. Big fan of theirs. I have loads of their music. So and I still have like all my music as MP3 files on my computer. Sarah's always like telling me to get on Spotify and stuff like this, and I'm like, no, I have my songs. I like to listen to my songs. It's like, I'm very awkward. She'll hear me playing some music and she's like, the quality of that is just terrible coming through on my laptop speakers. Yeah, but anyway, that's so yeah, as wrestling has more influenced me in terms of music rather than the other way around.
I can attest to that as well, not just with the iTunes thing, because I still have iTunes and all those songs, and Spotify too, but also, I mentioned this before on the show, one of my favorite bands is Rush, and the reason I discovered Rush is because the theme song for SummerSlam 04 was Rush's version of Summertime Blues, and I was like, oh, this song is pretty good, I wonder if the other songs by this band I'll like.
I got into it through the same song.
Oh, hey, there you go.
Song, and then, yeah, downloaded a bunch of other ones as well. I didn't become as big of a fan of them as you, seemingly, but yeah, that song caught my eye as well, caught my ear in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're probably like the biggest band I've gotten into through wrestling, I suppose. But yeah, my iTunes is like, it is littered with bands where I got one song by them. And it's because I heard it as a theme for, like, you know, Judgment Day 05 or No Mercy 07 or what have you. But yeah, wrestling has probably been one of the big...
All the new metal as well.
Oh, like... new metal and rap metal and rap rock and all those favorites for sure.
Like, I absolutely got into Creed and Limp Bizkit big time when I was a teenager, purely off the back of... the WWF Desire videos and Undertaker using Roland as his entrance music.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say wrestling and Guitar Hero / Rock Band are like the two biggest entry points for me in finding music I like and listen to this day. So if I have something to blame for my music taste, it's that, I guess. So anyway, let's get to the episode proper here. Enough with the preamble. This is, of course, a Music Memories episode. And if you don't know what that is, it's when I have on a guest and they share three examples of wrestling memories that are strongly linked to music in some way. It could be a wrestler theme. It could be a show or pay-per-view theme. It could be from an album, a game, a movie or show about wrestling, perhaps, whatever it may be. And again, like I said, it's not about analyzing the music. It's much more about these, you know, fun, casual conversations about these memories and about our fandoms and whatnot. And it's funny, Alan, you mentioned this earlier, talking about how you know, you're one of the most well-versed wrestling fans I know of. You know, you've watched so much wrestling over the years of various companies and countries and styles and eras. And before I reached out to you to do this, I thought to myself, you know, I bet Alan's going to have a really tough time only picking three examples. And sure enough, later on, you messaged me like, oh, Andrew, I hate you so much. This is so tough. I can't pick. It's tearing me apart. And I was like, I knew it. I knew it.
It was like casting aside children. I was like, because it wasn't just specific songs I was casting aside. It was like whole sections of my fan. Like I shoehorned in the Ring of Honor talk there because it was like, that was something I really wanted to highlight. It was just how much, when I was in college, like hearing the different Ring of Honor themes when I'd get the DVDs, and you'd only be hearing like small snippets of these songs.
Yes.
They were badly, like, for a good chunk of time, like you could barely hear them as well. Cause the audio was really poor. But it was enough. Like it was enough to get me into these different songs. So I had like an example that would have represented that, but I had to leave that on the chopping room floor. And there was a couple of others that were really hard cuts, especially ones that had sort of specific stories attached to them. So maybe down the road we'll do a part two, but I'm confident the three that I've settled on are three good ones. I was spoiled for choice here.
Well, with you, we could do a part two, a part six, a part 20, you know, whatever it may be to keep it coming back. It's fine by me. But anyway, let's get to it then. Alan, what is your first music memory for us?
Well, I mentioned earlier about the WWF marketing machine taking full advantage of the boom in the UK and Ireland and Europe in general in the early 90s. And this is a great example of that, because my first choice, Andrew, is WrestleMania by the WWF Superstars from WrestleMania, the album.
Who will survive?
Andrew, this one, I just think back to this. It really represents that era well to me, of kind of when I was like, by early 93, late 92, when this was done, like I was fully entrenched. Like I was so entrenched that we were able to basically lose WWF TV over here with, because Sky One, which it aired on, dropped off our sort of basic cable package that we had in my area. So I lost all ability to watch WWF, and I followed 1983 WWFs pretty much solely through the magazine. And whenever I'd be at a friend's house who had Sky Sports, and I was able to, because that was like a premium extra add-on to your cable, that my family, again, not being sports fans, were very much not inclined to ever get. So I knew the door was shut on that. So occasionally I'd be able to watch some stuff over at someone's house, but it was mainly through the magazine I was following the promotion. And I still have strong memories of that year, even though I followed it in such a way. I think going back and rewatching so much of it helps, but I was able to do that because, again, I was so entrenched by the end of 92. Like I was just watching every moment I could of this stuff when it was on TV. I was buying all the merch, as I explained. I wasn't a music buyer, so I was never like in the local record stores or anything like that, and never actually bought this album. I probably wasn't even like aware of like that I could, to be honest, because I was so young. I was more getting the posters and the pencil cases and the underpants, like I said. So this was something that I would see played on TV. Like they'd play snippets from it, from music videos or things like that. But also it would just be used in video packages all the time, particularly this song from the album. And it's the classic WrestleMania theme to me. It is a song that I woke my wife up to on the morning of our first time going to a WrestleMania in 2012 in Miami. She was woken up in her hotel room by this being absolutely blared and me just strutting around like a lunatic. She wasn't over me yet at that stage, so she was mildly entertained. If I did that now, I'd probably get a headbutt or something. But it's just like, yeah, it's the classic kind of WrestleMania song to me. And obviously WrestleMania was such a big kind of part of when you're a WWF fan, like WrestleMania is like the pinnacle, to the point of parody now. But certainly for me, in my formative years, it was a big deal. And the extra bonus you have here is all these little promos that the WWF guys did. We get Brett, we get Boss Man, we get Tatanka, we get the Nasty Boys, who promised they're gonna shove Nasty down our throat all through 93. A promise they lived up to, but not so much in the WWF, because they left pretty much right after this came out and went to WCW. So not as nasty a year as they had planned. Andrew, I don't know if you noticed about me, but ever since I was a little bitty boy, I've wanted to become a law enforcement officer. And I've wanted to stand up for just, yes, the Big Boss Man was in there and he has a great promo. And he lets us know that this nightstick and these handcuffs, they're an instrument of justice. Yeah, the big one that's a memory to me here is Brett. Brett was my guy. Didn't care about Hogan. Thought he was phony. Brett was my guy. And have a 34L30 done with Lee Malone about Bret Hart. And if you want to know more about how much Brett meant to me as a young fan, I spell it out there. But his promo in this just sums up Brett to perfection. And it's a good confident promo because he probably did a couple of takes and it wasn't live. So it's like Brett with his best kind of talking ability that he had at that time. And just very simple, very true to character. He's like, I am the excellent of execution, boys. There's a new gun in town. So he was the new WWF champion at that point. So that ruled. It's awesome. What do you think of it?
Oh, it's quite the bop. Yeah. We played this song a couple times before on the show. Early on, we did a WrestleMania themes episode. And then me and Joe Gagne did an episode about WrestleMania the album, which is what this is on, obviously. And you mentioned Lee Malone. Me and Lee did an episode a few years ago about the McMahons and their themes. And this is on it because the instrumental of this was Linda's theme for many years. So there you go. And yeah, every time I play it, I get happy because it's such a bop, as I said. And the album, you know, it's funny. It's a precursor to an album that came out around the time I became a fan, WWE Originals, which did an episode on as well a few years ago. And that album is much like this one. It's a bunch of, you know, at the time, current WWE wrestlers getting in the booth and quote unquote singing their own songs. So you had like Kurt Angle do it and Booker T and Trish and Chris Jericho and Rikishi and all sorts of people there. So this album and this song is very much, again, it's a precursor to all that. And WWE Originals, that was the first album I ever got as a wrestling fan. So, you know, chances are, if I had been born a few years earlier and gotten into wrestling when this album came out in 93, this could have been my first wrestling album. And much like WWE Originals, you know, I wouldn't say it's a great album in the traditional sense, but it's still a fun time capsule, Alan, that's for sure.
It's certainly not great in the traditional sense. It is a classic example of how when you're doing mass production of something that you want to have. You don't want to put a lot of time and care and effort into making, but you want to sell a bunch of. This is like a great example because I guarantee you, like, the songs they had and like the superstars' voiceovers that they recorded were nothing was done for the purpose of specific songs. I'd say they just got each of these wrestlers into the studio, got them to churn out a bunch of promos, and then they just lobbed them in wherever, and it was like, yeah, this will do here. And the best example is that this song, WrestleMania, of course, famously starts with, "Are you ready for the Survivor Series? Who will survive? Yeah, and I know you know the answer to this, Andrew, because you are, in fact, the computer, but listeners, you may not be aware that the man who actually said that line on WWF TV or on WWF taping, I don't know if it was ever on TV, it probably wasn't, was one Jimmy Jam Garvin of the Freebirds, who very briefly came in and did like an announcing deal in the WWF. And yeah, they taped a bunch of stuff and just exists as stock footage and not something they ever really went any further with, but it's standing up in the green screen podium. He yelled that out one time and it made it to this song. Living in Immortality is Jimmy Jam Garvin.
As a kid, did you ever think, wait a minute, why is there a sound clip of "I said, are you ready for the Survivor Series" in a song about WrestleMania? Or did you not care?
Not as a kid. It was when I like sort of rediscovered this song or this album, I guess, in an ironic kind of sense, and like in my 20s, and I was like, listen to this stuff, like, you know, that kind of nostalgia, kind of when you go back and look at things from your youth. Like it was at that point when I played this and I was like, oh yes, WrestleMania song. Why does it start with Survivor Series reference? That's weird.
Yeah, well, speaking of weird, I mean, I think this is a good example of, you know, the WWF being like in its own world, because the album came out in 93, and at the time, you have stuff like grunge and alt-rock and gangster rap really dominating pop culture, and yet here's the WWF with, you know, this 80s-sounding, super-polished, New Jack Swing kind of diglo pop music. You know, it's a little strange for sure, the contrast. I mean, at the time, the WWF was still very colorful and family-friendly, and it was nowhere near later on in the decade where you had the Attitude Era and it was all swearing and boobs and metal and all that fun stuff, you know. But still, I mean, it's a good example, I think, of the trend of WWE kind of being in its own bubble, especially when it comes to like contemporary pop music and what's popular at the time, because it feels like, you know, WWF is always like 5 years behind current trends. And I think that's pretty evident here, Alan.
Absolutely. And I think they had the right production company to achieve that with the Simon Cowell led. I'm trying to get the name of the, is it Stock, Aiken and Waterman, I think was.
Yes.
Yeah. So like this was the group that put out like Kylie Minogue and a bunch of like boy bands and stuff like that, and obviously led to Simon Cowell becoming far more famous later in his life as part of the X Factor he was on, and then he might have done like an American show as well. I don't remember.
American Idol. He was, you know, the big guy.
American Idol. Yeah. Okay. Well, he is like obviously a big deal. I'm sure most people listening are aware of him, but they might not be aware that he was like the producer behind this. And obviously, with it being an English company producing it, WWE outsourced it, obviously, but also that's really given away with the Macho Man song, where they repeatedly call him Macho Man.
Yeah.
The Macho Man.
Macho Man.
Which, like, anyone over here would say Macho, but those of us who were wrestling fans all say Macho. So, yeah, it's one of those little things. There's a few things like that in my verbiage that I pronounce as an American would, purely because I grew up watching the WWF, and might make people who didn't over here kind of turn their heads and raise an eyebrow.
I can imagine, yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Well, that was number one. Alan, what is music and memory number two?
Well, Andrew, we're going to fast forward quite a bit here. Let me think, 24 years or so later in my life, as I'm, 14 or so years ago. I'm aging myself more. 14, 15 years later in my life, I'm in college, starting in college. You know, talk about college being the time of your life where you, yeah, spread your wings and try new things and let loose a little bit. And I certainly did that because I got myself into the world of Japanese professional wrestling in a big way and independent professional wrestling. I was experiencing new things in college. And one of those things was Dragon Gate / Toryumon. And I just very quickly became a huge fan of this promotion, its history. I lapped it up. I was the promotion that I most got into when I started following Japanese wrestling was Pro Wrestling Noah, and I was sampling out different things from different promotions. But it was when I found Dragon Gate and when my friend Michael Smith from the F4W board sent me for the F4W Secret Santa in 2005, he sent me a comp tape he made of a bunch of Toryumon stuff and a couple of DVDs, and I just got so into it, and I started following Dragon Gate because, of course, at that point it had just switched from Toryumon to Dragon Gate. So I started following Dragon Gate as it happened, and the song I would routinely hear on these shows was one, Dragon Storm. Dragon Storm is a song which has varied over the years. There's basically like a new version of Dragon Storm every year or two that they have, and they'll play it at the start of shows, and they'll play it for video packages. It was used as the intro for the TV in 2004, right as they changed from Toryumon to Dragon Gate. The TV show had this amazing anime style opening video, which just all the characters of the roster in cartoon form going through this adventure and all these scenes that like represented their characters. So like Genki Horiguchi would be like pulling up on his surfboard on the beach, and Anthony W. Mori would be sitting peacefully in a meadow. The heels, Ag and Isao, would be chasing some poor baby face. All this great stuff just that really just showcased the characters of the promotion. And this was the classic version of Dragon Storm. I believe the original version of Dragon Storm that played on this video. And as I said, over the years it's changed, but year to year it only really changes kind of subtly. But it's, if you go back and like listen to the version of Dragonstorm now compared to that original one, it is quite a bit different. But from year to year, you don't really notice the differences as much. And a big thing for me was going to Dragon Gate UK shows for the first time in like 2009. Mark Sloan from A Merchandise, who promoted those shows, and the Noah UK shows, his big thing was authenticity. He did not want to cut any corners when it came to making these as authentic as possible. I think that was something that was a bit of a difference between DGUSA and DGUK. I don't think Gabe put much thought in. Gabe had other priorities, you know, like Gabe was all about his booking and stuff like that, where because he was doing more shows. With the Dragonite UK shows being more standalone, Sloan was more focused on the event experience and as many nods to big time Dragon Gate fans as possible, and also making the wrestlers feel comfortable. So they had a Dragon Gate sized ring, they had Dragon Gate ring dressings like the turnbuckles and the apron, all that kind of stuff. And then something I remember posting on the UKFF board, like in the giant thread where they'd be putting updates for the show, like making wrestler announcements and stuff like that. I remember posting like, they've gotta play Dragonstorm before the show. And sure enough, on the first show and every show thereafter, Dragonstorm would play, letting you know the show was kicking off. And I just remember the first time, pretty much every time when that song would play, I would just be buzzing with excitement, because it was like, it made me feel like I was about to see a true authentic Dragon Gate product.
Yeah, you sent me the clip of the anime intro with this song, and it's amazing, because yeah, it's a full-blown anime-style intro. And I've seen so many wrestling show intros over the years, and they all tend to follow the same mold of, you know, live action shots of guys posing or hitting moves. Not this one. This one, you've got like, you know, a cartoon dancing Magnum Tokyo. You've got a cartoon Naruki Doi with a baseball bat and like a very, very cute looking dragon kid with giant cute eyes and all that stuff. I mean, compared to just every other wrestling TV intro I've ever seen, this is wholly unique. I've never seen anything else like it. And that's Dragon Gate. You know, I mentioned WWF kind of being in its own little world. I mean, so is DG. You know, there are times where they've done cross-promotional stuff with other companies and the big ROH stuff back in the day. And nowadays, they've got guys like Shun Skywalker and SB Kento hopping over to America and Mexico for little trips. But, you know, Dragon Gate, it just feels like a company that in and of itself is its own unique thing. They have their own style. They have their own familial atmosphere and tone. And, you know, these TV intros like this one go along with that. And if you're someone who's only used to a certain way of wrestling being presented, and then you're shown this clip, you're going to remember that for a very long time, I'd imagine. And you're going to be very curious about, you know, what the heck's going on with this company, that they have a full-blown anime intro, for God's sake. So yeah, very, very cool and very unique of Dragon Gate to have that kind of thing, Alan, for sure.
Yeah, I think the end of the clip really speaks to what you were getting at there, Andrew, because it's like they show all these little the scenes with the cartoon characters, and then it kind of comes to an end, and this giant gate opens, and a dragon comes out, and a dragon basically wraps around someone who's more inclined to being able to describe these things would do a far better job than me, I'm sure. But the dragon like kind of emerges and like wraps itself around everything that's happened in the 30 seconds, and then wraps itself into the form of the Dragon Gate logo. So it's like that universe is just being just locked in within this logo that has emerged from the gate. It's so cool. It really is. I assume it was the Gaiora television company that produced this intro. They are where Toriumon and Dragon Gate have had their TV since their inception. So a company with very high production values. If you were a fan of All Japan B Banquet back in the day, that also aired on Gaora and would have great productions. So, I would assume they should take the credit for that. Have you seen any of the other Dragon Gate TV intros? There's the 2006 / maybe early 2007 one is one that I think you'd really like. It's set to Sting Me by the Black Crowes.
I think I've seen that. Yeah.
It's really cool. Like it's not animated, but it's the way they do it, the special effects they have on it are just so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I haven't seen all of them, but again, I hear that these things are all pretty cool and unique as far as TV intros go.
It's kind of so, these days it's kind of because you still see some of the Gaora shows when they do live shows on Dragon Gate Network. I have ones that are live on Gaora simultaneously with the network airing, so you still see the intro there. And for like the last 4 or 5 years, the intro's been kind of generic. It's pretty much the same song, and it just shows little bits of footage of the wrestlers kind of coming down to the ring in their different groups one by one, and kind of puts their name up on screen. Or so it's, I don't know, that's been a bit of a disappointing thing for me, is how it was so different. It was always a big deal to me as a weekly Infinity watcher. Whenever you'd get a new intro, like maybe every 18 months or so, I was like, oh, there's a new intro to Infinity. It's so cool. Yeah, the fact that they've kind of stuck with the same generic version for a while now, and they just replace guys as they move on or move into different factions and stuff like that, replace some of the footage, but it's generally the same, that's disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of a recurring topic on these Music Memories episodes, which is, you know, the passage of time and how time always moves on and things change. And we look back on certain wrestlers and certain companies or golden eras or whatever, and we may have thought at the time, oh, this is fantastic, it'll last forever, it's never going to go away. And then the cold slap of reality hit us in the face, and time moved on, and things changed, and they went away. And looking at the intro here, there are just a slew of recognizable DG, you know, legends in this video. Shima, Yoshino, Doi, Genki, Ryo Saito, Don Fuji, Milano, Stalker Ichikawa, the list goes on. And, you know, these are guys who at the time, I'm sure people thought, hey, these guys are Dragon Gate stalwarts. They are DG through and through. They're machines in the ring. They'll be around forever. And yeah, nowadays, some guys are still there. Genki's still there. Ryo Saito's still there. Don Fuji. But there are a lot of guys in that video who are not still there for one reason or another. You know, Shima, Yoshino, Magnum, Milano. Those guys are gone, and they've been gone for a while, and they've been replaced by newer and newer generations of guys who somehow seem to just pop out of the ground. I don't get it. Like, the dojo, they just seem to churn out guys left and right like crazy. It's weird, but
all the more reason why I'd like to see a sort of fresh, new intro that they could use, or some video packages that they could use to allow these guys, these new guys, kind of feel like they have their own thing that represents them. Because like when I think of that anime intro, to me that represents that crop of the guys that came around when Dragon Gate started, when it split from Toriumon. Like that's that crew represented in that video, and I'd love to have something that represents the D Courage and Skywalker Natural Vibes crew that we have nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Dragon Gate, you know, even when things change and guys move on or whatever, I think the general spirit of the promotion still remains. So, yeah, I think a lot of guys right now would fit right into an anime intro. Like you said, Shun and SBK and D-Courage and Diamante and Hyo and the Natural Vibes crew, of course. They would all fit right into an anime intro, I think, very well. So, yeah, hopefully one day Gaora will shell out the cash to, you know, make a new one. How about that? That'd be nice.
So, Andrew, I think I'm ready to get to theme number 3, if that suits you.
That suits me just fine. In fact, I was about to ask you this very question. Alan, what is your third and final music memory for us?
Yeah, well, you teed me up perfectly with this by talking about times changing. And, you know, things don't always stay as they are. And people move on and things like that. And a huge part of my wrestling fandom was something I never really saw coming for like the first 15, 16 years of my wrestling fandom. I never really saw coming that I'd have a close to a decade of, certainly 7-8 years of regularly being able to attend live wrestling like several times a month, without too much hassle, to have to go to shows and to be seeing some of the best wrestlers and the most exciting wrestling and the biggest happenings in certainly independent pro wrestling. I didn't see that being a thing. I didn't see the indie wrestling boom that we would had in the 2010s kind of coming back around, particularly on this side of the world in Europe. And a big part of getting to experience that was, you know, getting to go to shows with Sarah a whole hell of a lot, and a lot of friends we made along the way. So from like 2012, I would say, to 2019, I was going to be at OTT shows like 5 minutes from my house, flying over to the UK and going to Rev Pro and big shows in York Hall, or Progress shows in the Electric Ballroom, and of course regularly going to WXW for what started as just kind of going over for 16 Karat Weekend, and then that became a bigger thing with more people going, and it would be Karat Weekend, Tag League Weekend in the fall, and I would be going over for other shows as well in between. And just the, on top of like the great wrestling and the great wrestlers and the careers that blossomed during that period, and I'm just focusing on the positives of that period, because there were certainly many negatives that we that have come to light and came to light over time with that, and you know, have we've seen the error of we've seen the errors of that period in recent years, and what lessons have and haven't been learned from it. And a lot of people have kind of moved on. But to get me back on track here, the wrestling itself was great, but what I think about hugely was the party. And I don't mean like the after show parties, because that wasn't my thing. I thankfully steered clear of them, which was a better decision in hindsight than I even realized at the time. We would go to the shows, we would hang out, we would have a great time, and often at these shows, the shows themselves would feel like a party, particularly at WXW, and particularly at a big Karat Weekend or World Tag League or Tag Team Festival, as it changed its name to. You'd get like a dozen Irish, maybe two dozen Brits, a couple of Americans, people from all over coming in addition to all the crazy German fans and Austrian fans that would be there. And everyone was just in such great spirits, you know, a lot of booze flowing, I'm sure helped as well. And it was just, the energy was just there on some of those weekends, some of those trips to WXW. And I don't know if any song represents that energy and really that period of being happy at live wrestling for me. Then I don't think any other piece of music best illustrates that than a song that probably people who weren't there don't even know. And that is Nordisch by Nature by Fetus Brot, Ghostbusters remix.
Started.
And that song was the theme music of a young tag team called Hot and Spicy. The Mac and Axel Dieter Jr., who of course is now on SmackDown, is that right? As
yes.
Ludwig Kaiser, part of Walter's crew. So I saw he wrestled Rey Mysterio a couple of weeks ago, which is pretty wild. But I first started seeing him back when he was an extremely scrawny, kind of awkward, but you could tell there was a talent there, young wrestler, teaming with his partner, the Mac, who was just full of energy and charisma. And they had a connection with the German crowd, which was above kind of what you would think it would be based on their skill level at the time. But they improved really quick, and they got over really, really big as baby faces, and they had good heels going against them over the years that followed. And just from 2013 to whenever Junior left, they were just a huge part of WXW, and their music just set the tone for them, because I hear this music, I close my eyes, and I just think of everyone in the Turbinenhalle just going wild. And the first time I think I experienced it live, because I remember it being, I remember it at 2013. No, it would have been the 2014 Carrot. So this was the first time Sarah went to Carrot as well. And I was kind of not sold on Junior as a wrestler. I thought he was still quite green. And as she is not shy about reminding, this is absolutely one for the Sarah's right folder, because within like 20 seconds, she was like, oh, he's going to be a star. And I was like, oh, he's still kind of rough around the edge. And she was like, nope, doesn't matter. He's going to be great. And she was definitely right on that one. But they came out for their tag match on night one against the Inner City Machine Guns, who famously would be getting huge reactions wherever they'd go in the indies by coming out to Lionel Richie's All Night Long. And that song was just ridiculously over at indie wrestling shows in 2014. It's crazy, and you wouldn't have thought that any other piece of music would stand a chance against it, but the crowd went even crazier for Nordisch by Nature. And you had there's a video on YouTube of basically WXW fans won't let match start or something like that, because all the fans were just wanting they were chanting, play the music, play that. Can I curse here?
Please.
They were chanting, play the fucking music, do that, play the fucking music. And the wrestlers were obviously like totally just G-ing them on and egging them on. And it was great. It was really, really fun. And I just like things like that would happen. But in general, it was just, over the years, it was just that music would hit and it was like, hell yeah, here come Hot and Spicy, this is gonna rule. And it was a song which basically I had explained to me, because I was like, would ask people on the production side, I was like, what is this song, where did it come from? It's it was basically something that was done by a band from the kind of Hamburg region of Germany, which is where Hot and Spicy are from. So it was kind of representative of their home area in Northern Germany, Nordisch by Nature, Northern by Nature, I guess. And why it was set to the Ghostbusters as a remix, I don't know, but it worked for the context of a wrestling theme. And what was the other thing I was going to say? Oh yeah, that was the other thing about Hot and Spicy, is WXW would run shows like kind of if the primary shows were in the Turban Hala, if you think of like Ring of Honor in the mid-2000s, the Turban Hala Oberhausen shows were like your New York City, Philadelphia shows. Hamburg was the Chicago show. And where you had like the Second City Saints, like super over in Chicago, that was the phenomenon you had for Hot and Spicy in Hamburg. And there is a match which I talked about just this past week on my Miracle Matches podcast, where a very, very early in their career, Hot and Spicy go against the Outsiders, not National Hall, but AUT, as in Austria, Outsiders. Big Van Walter and Avalanche Robert Dreisker, and they go like 30 minutes in a just white hot Markthalle in Hamburg in front of what became known as Das Power Crowd, was the nickname the Hamburg crowd got, which included Axel Dieter Sr. in the front row, just totally like, there was so much of the match was centered around like Junior getting destroyed in front of his dad rearing back his fist and selling it in the front row, and Junior bleeding buckets, and this match is insane, and them winning the titles and Nordisk by Nature playing is like just this triumphant babyface thing for these two young guys. And just a little behind the scenes story to add to all that. And I swear, Andrew, sorry, I'll let you talk.
It's fine. It's totally fine.
I'm just ranting away here. But me and Sarah always joke about like any time you'd come over to WXW after these guys were around, you'd walk in and be a lot of people, like there would be like enthusiastic and happy or smiling, and you'd get some nice friendly greetings, then you'd get some that were just like hello and just kind of curt and just okay. And then you'd get Junior and Mac, who I don't think it mattered who came up to them or who entered, everyone got the same thing from those, like, yo, bro, like high fives, hugs, and just they'd be just so excited. Like, I always thought I was excited walking into WXW in those days. They took that to a whole other level, but they would always say when you first met them at a weekend, they'd always get, you partying this weekend, guys? You partying? You coming out? You partying? Oh, it's going to be a wild party. They'd always be talking like they were going to have this, especially when you went to Hamburg, they'd be like, oh, Hamburg after the show, it's going to be the craziest party. We're going to hit all these. They'd always talk about all this stuff, okay? And they're like, we got to bring you out, bro. We got to show you, da 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 da. And one time they did it, and then they had walked away, and like I forget who the wrestler was, but it was some more senior wrestler, and he's just shaking his head and just muttering to himself, and he just goes to me and Sarah's, we're just kind of like laughter, so he just go, you know, like they never get up to anything after the shows. They're like the most boring. They're like the most boring guys. Their parties are shit. There's never anything interesting. we always laugh about that amongst us. But that it's the actual party that they were so hyped up for, without knowing that this was what the highlight of their partying weekend would be. The show itself and their entrance, and I can't help but look back on it fondly. I think Junior, I know like that boom and the UK and European scene kind of would take a hit shortly after he left with the pandemic and things would shut down, but there was like he left in 2017, so there was a good 2 years there that I think if he hadn't gone to WWE, I think he would have been the biggest star in Europe. I think as big of a star as Walter became, I think Junior would have become right there with him. He had like three progress shows that he did before he left, and he was unbelievably good on those progress shows. And Ringkampf was just becoming this super over thing, and the kind of just the Ringkampf trio of Junior after he left Hot and Spicy, Junior, Walter, and Timothy Thatcher was awesome. And there's a match between them, pitting them and British Strong Style from Progress Show in like March 2017, I think it was. That's so good. And it's like, God, if those guys were just left be there and WWE didn't snap up Tyler and Junior and Walter and pretty much everyone in that match, actually, now I think about it, because Thatcher eventually they even grabbed, but everyone in that match ended up going to WWE within the next year or two. And if they hadn't taken those guys, like, I mean, Jesus Christ, the level of talent that was already there in Europe and that was becoming better was just crazy. And I think they would have really shone. But yeah, Junior went, he's doing well. And by the looks of things, I really enjoyed what I would see back a couple of years ago with him and what's his name? I always forget his name. The Italian German dude.
Well, he's Giovanni Vinci right now, but he was, oh God, I'm blanking on the name right now too.
Yeah, I always forget. Everyone always forgets. It's so weird. It's whatever reason, everyone always forgets his name. But they had a bunch of matches on NXT back when I used to watch that.
Fabian Aichner. There we go.
That was it. And yeah, they were a really good team. Probably still are if they're teaming together, right? So, the Mac, as far as I know, has left wrestling. I don't think he's doing any wrestling in a while. I would think that when WXW, the tag league there a month ago was really good fun. It felt like things were kind of maybe inching their way back towards getting a great atmosphere again. I think 16 Carat this coming year could be a blast. And, you know, maybe if he sniffs out the idea that there might be a party to be had and that energy is back, maybe the missing ingredient is the Mac. Maybe once we get the Mac back, and maybe they have him come out to that song, which they won't do because they don't use copyright music anymore. Another big problem for European wrestling was when WXW and Progress stopped using copyright music. But alas, we had a couple of years there where we had magic like Nordish by nature.
Well, a couple things. First of all, if the Mac did come back, he could use Return of the Mac by Mark Morrison. It's right there, Alan. It's perfect.
Oh, that would be amazing. He would get you'd be able to build a whole push off him coming back with that as his music.
And the other thing is, you did this whole big pick about Axel Dieter Jr. Earlier in the year, I did a Music Memories episode with Paul Volsch of the Emerald Flow Show. And one of his picks was Axel's heel theme in WXW, Cells by The Servant. And you want to talk about, you know, clashing musical stylings there, you know, here you go. I mean, one song is this really fun hip hop dance song that samples, you know, Ghostbusters and Thriller, Nordish, 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 da 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 da. And the other is this really slow, moody, dour British guy. The sun goes up and the sun goes down. Blah, blah, blah. Quite the fun little contrast there, I'd say.
Yeah, that was all very intentional. They put a lot of thought into selecting that theme for him when he was a heel singles guy. They really, and they came upon that, and they're like, yeah, this is the one.
Yeah, and those songs are in contrast with the Ringkampf theme, Symphony No. 9, which he also had. So, you know, it's funny how a lot of guys tend to stay in the same lane when it comes to the kind of music they use for their themes. And then there's Axel, who has just gone around the dial for his song choices for his theme music. So it's funny to think about that, I think. But yeah.
Tell me this, Andrew. Who is going to be the wrestler who bounces around enough that they finally get to a Shakira entrance music? Because I've yet to hear one.
I don't know. I'll have to do some digging on that to see if anyone used one of her songs before. I'm sure they have. I mean, you know, Hips Don't Lie was like a massive, massive single. I'm sure someone had to have used it back in the day. I don't know. Maybe Taguchi can use it, you know, at some point in the future. Maybe Taguchi can, you know, bust that one out there. Who knows? But
I could see some like random mass luchador on CMLL in 2006 come out to Hips Don't Lie. You know, I could totally see that. Not even a guy like with a dancing gimmick, just like a generic, like just like a Titan type guy just coming out to Hips Don't Lie. I want someone to come out underneath your clothes. There's an endless story. That'd be really dramatic. We could get the candles going in the, maybe just me getting one single candle going. I don't know. But that wrestler would be over with me if they use that.
I know Naito does the entrance with the suit on, and then he slowly takes it off in the ring. That might be his doing. That might be his song to use.
Yeah.
That might be his.
Yeah. That would be, I've always been a Naito fan, but there's always room for me to, you know, be more of a Naito fan, I think. So that could be just the thing that's needed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned, you know, the party atmosphere and the energy of all those shows that you went to back in the day. I remember, you know, during the boom, seeing people on my timeline on Twitter going to these shows at, you know, Progress and Rev Pro and WXW and OTT and places like that, and being jealous of them because, you know, I couldn't get to go. Maybe nowadays I'm not so jealous because of certain things that happen. Let's just say that. But back then I was, because it just looked like such a fun place to be. And a big part of that wasn't just the wrestlers or the matches. It was the music. It was the real music that they played to get that energy up and get that party atmosphere going. And that's true for this song, of course. It's true for a lot of songs that were used back in the day that people just got attached to and sang during the entrances and sometimes sang during the matches. I just remembered, actually, I did a Music Memories episode with Sarah Flannery, your fellow Irish citizen there, and one of her picks was Robot Rock by Daft Punk, which is, of course, Bobby Guns' theme in WXW. And there's the famous match with Guns and, was it Ilya or Thatcher? One of those two.
It was Ilya. I was Ilya, on commentary.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the crowd is literally chanting Guns, Bobby Guns, Ilya, Guns, Bobby Guns, Ilya for like 30 minutes straight, just nonstop chanting that. And, you know, real music, much like it did in ECW, much like ROH and the British Broom and whatnot, it's played such a massive role in elevating an atmosphere and making it feel really cool and special to be there, as you can attest to, Alan, because you were at all those shows, of course.
I can attest to that particular moment being very stressful for me as I tried to both commentate it and leave it breathe and that kind of a thing and not step on the moment, but also try to ensure that my commentary partner, the always incredibly excitable Rico Bushido, who I thought was going to, his head was going to explode with excitement, but I was more worried that he was about to trip over himself and fall over the balcony as he was like standing up and jumping and climbing on his stool and there's all these wires around, and I was like, oh my god, we're on the edge. This guy is, he is going to fall over the balcony here at any moment. I literally had my hand out, like trying to make sure he didn't fall as he was like going crazy and waving on the crowd. It was, yeah, very stressful.
You did the old Kevin Kelly move of protecting the monitors when a guy would crash into the guardrail in front of him, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be even worse if a monitor, I don't know, it'd be even worse, but it would be also bad if monitors fell down and landed on a fan's head.
Yes.
that might be worse than if Rico, because at least if Rico falls off the balcony, he's a former wrestler, he can take the bump. then again, he had probably he was probably impaired in some way, shape, or form, being Rico Bushido, and how he enjoyed spending his time, which he is very open about. So I don't think I'm letting the cat out of the bag that Rico might be, not of the clearest eyes during a performance such as that.
Say no more.
I just hope it was like a little bit of weed and not like crazy hallucinogens that made him think he was like not on a balcony and or made him think that he was in the middle of like a lake and he was gonna like jump into the water with excitement. Like, no, Rico, that's just fans 20-30 feet underneath you, don't jump down into them. You crazy man.
We're going to wrap up soon, but I want to bring up just one more thing here because you jogged this memory for me talking about Axel Sr. Several years ago, I went to an NXT house show in Boston at the Aganis Arena, which is where they do Dynamite nowadays. And the main event of that show was a six-man tag. It was Samoa Joe and The Revival versus Shinsuke Nakamura, Johnny Gargano, and Tommaso Ciampa. And Ciampa, for those that may not know, he's a Boston guy, you know, trained by Kowalski, the whole deal there. And I was sitting not front row, but close to the front row on the floor. And directly across from me, across the ring in the front row, was this old guy. And he was being very, very animated during that main event. Just, you know, super supportive of the good guys, super booing of the bad guys. And at one point, the crowd started chanting, old guy, old guy, old guy, because, you know, he was just such a big, you know, part of the show at that point. And of course, as it turns out, that old guy is Tommaso Ciampa's dad. So no surprise then that he's super amped up and invested in that main event there. So yeah, that's my wrestling dad story there for you, Alan. There you go.
Yeah, wrestling parents in the crowd can often be magic. Have you ever seen like mid-2000s ROH with Mama Lethal?
Alan, the sheer timing of you mentioning that, I'm doing a big watch of classic ROH in order, and right now I'm in the summer of 04, and it's after Hydro leaving Special K and becoming Jay Lethal, and on some of those shows you can hear a very, very, very loud, high-pitched voice yelling, come on, Jay! Let's go, Jay! Jay, come on! And it's like, I wonder who that could be. I'm also listening to Through the Years with Trevor Damon, Matt Feuerstein, and they're going through those shows as well. And
I threw poor Andrew off there.
you did, yes. But they're going through those shows, and they mention as well, you know, Jay's mom being extra supportive of her dear boy there with the chanting, which gets a little grating at times, I think, but it's also very cute and sweet to see her, you know, be so supportive of her dear son Jay there. So there you go. But
yeah, as much as they like would put focus on her on like the actual like shows in certain ways, but apparently like what you don't ever see and what you experience if you're around her at shows live is like 100 times more intense and greater than like the things they actually did, like as kind of part of the angles where they used her.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Music of the Mat. Thank you so much for listening. And Alan, thank you so much for being here. You are just a gem of a guy. And this was a gem of an episode. And it was absolutely worth the wait to get you on here finally. This was just so much fun, my friend.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Andrew. I apologize to you and your listeners for so much rambling over the course of the show.
Oh, no, I love that stuff. Come on, we all do.
I was very conscious that I was doing it, but also not stopping myself. So, yeah, apologies for that. And, I hope everyone enjoyed. And I've plugged my stuff enough over the course of the show, so you know where to find me. But, it's been great. And, keep listening. Music of the Mat, everybody.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And again, if we have to do like a part two, a part three, a part 17, whatever, to keep getting you back on here, then so be it, you know?
Sounds good, buddy.
And Music of the Mat is, of course, part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find all the great shows on there at voicesofwrestling.com. Follow the show on Twitter at Music of the Mat. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich. Yes, Twitter is still a thing for now, apparently, so we'll see how long that lasts. But more importantly, voicesofwrestling.com/Discord for all discussions and comments. All sorts of people have joined up lately. I am there. Many other VOW people are there, too. Alan, of course. It's a real hootenanny, that Discord, Alan, as I'm sure you know.
Big Galazzo Dan. You got big stars popping up now in the Discord.
Yeah, Matthew from Botchamania is in there now, and David Bixenspan, and TDE Gifts. So all the big movers and shakers are in there. That's the place to be. Voicesofwrestling.com/Discord. Also, voicesofwrestling.com/donate. For any donations, just click the big donate button beneath the name Music of the Mat. If you donate, hey, thanks so much. You're awesome. And of course, rate, review, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many other places. Alan, thank you again, and I'll see you around.
See you, Andrew. Take care, everyone.
All right, for Alan Cunahan, I'm Andrew Rich, and I'll see you next time on Music of the Mat. Take care, guys.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture, and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.